freios, ¿no? Son it will take some time to come. I'll just try to search for it while we are continuing. So anyway, the point I was making is that this verse seems to be quite remarkable. And why does it use the word Vishnu instead of Krishna? Because Vishnu is well known in the Vedic literature to be the Supreme Lord. And Vishnu is not at all a playful person. Vishnu is God. And God, who means business, God is in office. So because ordinary people will have the tendency to misunderstand Krishna's Raslila to be like the pastime of an ordinary person. So therefore, ordinary man and woman, therefore to remind us that this person who is performing the Leela here is not an ordinary person. He is Vishnu. He is the Supreme Lord. Therefore the word is used, Vishnu. And when Krishna performed these pastimes, see, throughout the history of the world, the greatest destructive force is not war, it is ultimately lust. If you look back at the history of the world, most of the wars are caused by lust. It's actually the lust which makes people fight, and even when people fight on so-called religious grounds, it is based on ultimately the desire to fulfill the carnal urge. Carnal urge is the urge to fight, urge to fulfill sexual desire. So karna means flesh. That's why we have carnivorous, those who eat flesh. So carnal means the carnal desire is the desire of the flesh. So now all the religions tell us that this carnal urge has to be restricted if one has to move towards God. But most religions are not able to tell us where does this urge come from. So in the Christian theology, their theology is very peculiar. Theology means their knowledge, understanding of God, a study of God. What is it peculiar? They say that actually Adam and Eve originally fell from the spirit, from the paradise of the kingdom of God. And because Adam sinned against God, all of you know the story, isn't it? A simple story is there that Adam, God had told you can eat all the fruits in this paradise except for this one fruit, one apple. And then the devil came in the form of a serpent. And he tempted, not Adam, because Adam was intelligent. He tempted Eve. Eve heard. Why are you not eating that fruit? Oh, because God has told us not to eat that fruit. Do you know why God has told you not to eat that fruit? No. Because if you eat that fruit, you will become God. Oh. Now God is not there, He is not watching. Go and eat that fruit and then you can become God. He was captivated. And then what happened? Eve went and told Adam, let us eat that fruit. No, God has told us not to eat that fruit. So now Adam was torn between God and a woman. That is the eternal predicament of material existence. God is on one side, woman is on the other side. And what happened? There would Adam succumbed. Let us eat it. And when they ate it, then they fell. So they fell from the spiritual world to the material world. That is the story which is there in the Bible. Now, they consider Adam to be the first man and Eve to be the first woman. And from them, everything has descended. Everyone has descended. And they say that Adam committed the original sin against God. And because of his sin, and we are all his children, so we all have automatically become sinful. So because they don't consider that all of us are there in the spiritual world, they take this story literally, and they consider that all of us are sinful. So Adam's sinfulness has sort of passed down to us as a genetic defect for so many generations upon generations. And according to them, they don't have believed any law of karma. So if there are earthquakes, there are tsunamis, there are whirlwinds, there are huge natural calamities which kill thousands of people, what is the cause of that? That is because Adam ate one apple. It seems quite absurd. So now our Vaishnava Acharya explained that actually the Adam Eve story is allegorical. Allegorical means what? It represents something. It's not to be taken literally. Actually, the Bible speaks many times in allegories. It's not the only time. Several places the Bible speaks in allegory. Allegory is a moral story which does not involve real characters. It involves fictitious characters who are used to teach us a lesson. So the idea is that all of us are like Adam. And all of us were tempted, and every one of us sinned against God, and that's why we fell from the spiritual world. So, because they have that idea that Adam committed the original sin, so when sufferings come in this world, they just can't explain it. And intelligent people cannot take the idea that, you know, because somebody did that sin, first of all, it doesn't appear a very serious sin also. If you eat one apple, what is the problem? Isn't it? And even if it is a sin, why are thousands of people being killed? So they have evolved a strange theology. So like after the tsunami took place. So they had approached representatives of different religions. What is your response? So from Hinduism they approached us. And from ISKCON they asked me. So then I was looking at the responses of other religions. So I explained about the law of karma and things like that. It was explained very sensitively. But there the Christian explanation was remarkable. They said, actually, most people think that God is in control of this world, and they are totally wrong. God is not in control of this world. This world is controlled by devil, and devil is causing all this suffering. And they consider devil to be an entity separate from God, independent of God. And they say, again, they have to bring in the Adam Eve story. What they say, when Adam decided to obey devil, then he accepted devil as his master. By yielding to his temptation, he shifted himself from the control of God to the control of devil. And therefore, since that time of Adam, this world is controlled by devil. And all the sufferings of this world are caused by the devil. And therefore, what do we have to do? If you are devotees of God, then devil will cause you special trouble. And because devil is almost as powerful as God. God is most powerful, but devil is almost as powerful. And that's why sometimes in the fight between God and devil, devil wins. Devil wins. And when the devil wins, then innocent people suffer, the devoted people suffer. And even if this happens, at the end, there will be a final battle, final fierce, deadly battle. At that time, God will defeat and destroy the devil. And then he will bring paradise in this world. And in this world only everybody will become eternal, everybody will become happy. And there will be the kingdom of God here. So there are several problems with this narrative. First problem is that, till then what? Till then you have to keep suffering. And there's one particular organization, they like to make dates, you know. So on this particular date, you know, 1985 was the date. 1985 there is a date when there's going to be judgment. And God is going to destroy devils, and all those people who are not surrendered to God, they are going to be cast into hell forever. That is their idea. 1985 came and went. Nothing happened. God is so merciful, he has given us a lease extension period. And now, their period has been they have extended their period 8 times till now. And now they have become, to some extent, they have become a laughing stock. You know, that means they are predicting some sort of disaster will happen, it doesn't happen. And that's why, you know, at one time there was rumor that World War III is going to take place. So Prabhupada, devotee asked Prabhupada, what should we do to prepare for World War III? Well, chant Hare Krishna. What else? What else can you do, Prabhupada? Just chant Hare Krishna. So as devotees, you don't have to worry too much about specific predictions. Will the world get destroyed at this time or get at that time? What we focus on is the principle that all of us are going to die one day, and it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. It's not a matter of if we will die one day. No, we are surely going to die. There's no if in that. It's only when, not if, but when. So realizing this, we focus on our cultivation of Krishna consciousness as intensely as possible. But why I was telling all this is that this carnal desire, all of you are clear with this word carnal desire, it's basically the lust or the sexual desire. So carnal desire is what takes people away from God. It's the strongest force which impels people towards sin and violence in this world. So where does it originate from? So the Christians say it originates from evil. It originates from the devil. But where does it? It seems to be like a innate part of our nature. And how did the devil have that influence on us, by which he could create the desire within us? And mostly they say that you have to control that desire. But it's a great challenge to control the desire. So the Vedic literature is unique in that it reveals to us where this desire actually comes from. So it explains that actually in the spiritual world we are all eternally related with Krishna. And those relationships are in one of five mellows. So among those five mellows, one of them is the Madhurya Ras. You're not able to find that particular PPT, but it's another related PPT. It's also nice. There's not much text in this, but it's very useful. So in the Western religious tradition, what we do after we go back to the kingdom of God is not at all clear. See, the Christians are very, very good at book distribution. Like Prabhupada said, we should be as proficient at book distribution as the Christians. They distribute, and they have huge printing presses, and they distribute millions and millions of books every year. And their books are often very profusely colored and with nice pictures. But it's remarkable, they have so many pictures about the kingdom of God. And all those pictures, their books with all their pictures, about the kingdom of God, all the pictures are about man, woman, children, animals. There's no God in those pictures. There's all supposed to be books about God, but there are no pictures about God. Because there is no description of God available in those pictures. So the way the understanding comes is that actually in the kingdom of God, God is only like an incidental peripheral factor. So one devotee, again Ramana Swarupa only, when he used to go to mass earlier in his childhood, then he's a Baptist, nominal Baptist. So there, one day he asked his priest, you know, what does God do in heaven? And the priest looked as if he had never got this question in his life. Wondering, what does God do in heaven? And then he asked himself, the priest doesn't have an answer, okay, what do we do in heaven? Then said, actually, okay. Actually, the idea that he got of heaven was, it's like a perpetual family reunion. Perpetual family reunion. So all your grandfathers and great grandfathers and grand aunts and cousins and everybody who has passed away, you meet all of them and there is a happy reunion over there. So it's like, you know, a cozy Sunday afternoon where you're sitting and relaxing on the sofa and everybody is coming and chit-chatting. So he felt, you know, life in this world seems more interesting. Because there it is that it's just old people, all old people are uniting. Now you see what happens is that in the Christian theology, their idea is that somehow, although the soul is talked about very much in the literature, but they have somehow developed the idea that the soul and the body are the same. So the soul and the body are the same, and that's why they bury people. Because their idea is at the time of judgment, then the soul along with the body will be resurrected. Because Jesus was resurrected like that. Jesus was crucified and apparently he died. When he came back with the same body. And that's what the people saw on Resurrection Day. So they think that is how all of us will be resurrected. And that's why they try to preserve the body. Of course, there's a huge problem because you need so much space. And the countries which are prominently Christian or Muslim, huge quantity of the space has to be preserved for coffins. Actually, in some small Islamic Christian countries in Europe, almost like one-fifth or one-sixth of the land is now used for graveyards. Because you have to preserve the bodies of all the previous generations. Because if you don't preserve them, if their body is not there, then they will not be resurrected. But a strange idea is that the body is already gone. If you open the coffin, you won't find the body there. Already it is deteriorated and destroyed by germs. And then also again the problem comes, okay, if you are going to be resurrected in the body, then which body? If somebody died at the age of 70 and he's going to get that body for all of eternity, he'll be miserable. He's going to get a 70-year-old body, isn't it? Then he says, no. Actually, you'll get a youthful body. A healthy, youthful body, 20-year-old body there. But what about if somebody dies at the age of 4? He never had a 20-year-old body. And you bury the 4-year-old body, and what is the use of that? So they run into a lot of contradictions because they confuse the body with the soul. But because they confuse the body with the soul, they also consider bodily desires quite important. And when these bodily desires are an obstruction to the spiritual path, they don't know how to give it up. But the Vedic scriptures explain that actually we have a relationship with Krishna, not at the bodily level, because we don't have this body. This body keeps changing. It says we change dresses, we change bodies, the Bhagavad Gita says. But we have original Swarupa. And that Swarupa we know, we have relationships in five rasas. So this knowledge of five rasas is also not there anywhere in the any of the other literatures of the world. So these five rasas, they come together and it means people in these five rasas, they come together and they form a wonderful life for Krishna where he relates with all kinds of people with all kinds of relationships. But when Krishna is relating in this way, all the relationships are selfless. You know, when Krishna had gone away from Vrindavan to Dwarka, at that time messengers would come to tell how Krishna is in Dwarka. Once a messenger came from Dwarka and he said, oh, actually Krishna sent a message. I am such a ungrateful son that for my parents who took care of me since my childhood, so they only had to take care of me. When I grew up and it was my turn to take care of them, I left them and went away. So he said, such an ungrateful son, his fault will be restored, his fault will be rectified only when he comes back and again starts serving his parents. So I am praying every day. Krishna is praying. This is Leela. He says, I am praying every day that soon my work here in Dwarka will get over and I'll be able to come back to all of you. In separation from you, I lament every day and I remember all of you. Then the Maharaj Yashoda Mai, the Vrajvasis, heard this. They all started crying. And they said, in separation from Krishna, we suffer. But we don't mind that we suffer. But in separation from us, Krishna suffers. And we can't tolerate that. So the Vrajavasi's love is not selfish, it is selfless. They are not suffering because, oh, we can't enjoy Krishna. No, they are suffering because they know that Krishna enjoys in their association. And when they are not there to serve Krishna, then Krishna will not be happy. So actually, in the Lalit Madhav, it is described that when Lalit Madhav is a book written by Rupa Goswami, so there Nandi Mukhi and Nanda Devi are conversing, so they are asking, you know, how is the condition of Radharani in the separation from Krishna? So Radhana's condition is pitiable. She is burning in the fire of separation so terribly that actually if she lies down on a bed of leaves, the leaves dry and wilt. You know, if to cool her fever of separation, some wet cloth is put on her forehead, the wet cloth dries up. And her fever of separation, the fire and fever of separation in her heart is so great that she would have died long ago. But some inexplicable power seems to keep her alive. So what is that inexplicable power which keeps Radharani alive? Radharani cannot live without Krishna. She would have left Krishna alive world. She would have died long ago. But she lives on because she thinks if Krishna has promised he will come back to Vrindavan. And if he comes back and if he sees I am not there to serve him, then he will be unhappy. And I don't want Krishna to be unhappy. That's why, although she is so unhappy in separation from Krishna, she still lives on. So, the relationship of the Vrajavasis with Krishna is entirely selfless. It is entirely pure. But unfortunately, when the soul comes to this material world, the soul wants to imitate Krishna. And when he wants to imitate Krishna, he tries to form relationship with others just like Krishna has in the spiritual world. That means, you know, we also want to have servants who will serve in Dasyaras. We want friends who will serve in Sakhyaras. We also want to be the apple of the eye of our parents. They will love us and show us their affection other in Vatsalyas. And then we also want to have a relationship with the opposite sex in Madhuryas. So basically, the relationship in the spiritual world, in which Krishna is in the center, we want to have those relationships in this world. And we also want to be very famous. And we want people to admire us. Such a great person has come. Shantaras. Isn't it? So we want to imitate Krishna basically in this world. That's what we have come for. And you will see, although all these rasas give Krishna satisfaction, the maximum satisfaction comes from Madhurya Ras, the most intimate relationship. It describes actually Dasya is the common denominator for all relationships. Even when Radharani is associating with Krishna, she is also serving Krishna. She may serve in different ways. But Dasya is a common denominator for all relationships. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Sanatana Goswami, it is described that just as how does the creation takes place? You know, there is ether. That is the first element that is created. And from ether comes? Yeah, from ether sound doesn't come. But ether has a capacity to propagate sound. Shabda ke Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 7.8. Then he says, from the ether comes the next element, that is air. Now air can not only transmit sound, it can also transmit wind. Sorry, through the ether sound can be heard. Through the air we can sense touch. So from ether comes air. Now from the air also sound can go. But air additionally has the capacity to transmit sound also. Sound as well as air. So like that, ether is the common denominator for air. From air comes water. So whatever is the property of ether, that is, ether is included in the subsequent elements. And something more is added. So like that, Shantaras, when to that we add the desire to serve. What is the characteristic of Shantaras as described In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says two characteristics: complete detachment from matter and complete attachment to Krishna. These two are the characteristics of Shantaras. Now, after having these two characteristics of Shantaras, what is the characteristic of Dasyaras? These two characters are already there: complete detachment from matter, complete attachment to Krishna. But in addition to that, there is also the characteristic of the desire to serve. In Shantaras, one thinks God is so great, He's so almighty, He's so awesome. What can I do for Him? I am a tiny person, I can never do anything for Him. Therefore, it is not that there is no desire to serve. One feels that, what can I do for God? God is so great. And in that sense, one doesn't feel the need to serve God. We'll look at this afterwards. So, please close that. Okay, wait a minute. One feels there is no need to serve God because there is nothing that I can do for God. God is so great. Whatever He needs, He already has. So what can I do for Him? In that sense, there is no desire to serve. But still, in the Dasyaras, one feels, oh, Krishna is such a wonderful person. Although He doesn't need anything, just let me do something for Him. Let me do it as an expression of my love for Him. So when to Shantaras, the desire to serve is added. Then that becomes Dasyaras. And to Dasyaras, friendship is added. Krishna is not just my master, He is my friend. Then what happens? Then it becomes Sakhyaras. And then, bent to that friendship, into that Sakhyaras, actually the desire or the feeling that actually Krishna is dependent on me. The feeling of being Krishna's maintainer is added. That actually, if I don't feed Krishna, then Krishna will fall sick. So, Krishna may even die. They feel that I have to maintain Krishna. When the feeling of maintenance is added, then that becomes Vatsalyaras. And to that Vatsalya, when intimacy is added, then that becomes Madhurya Ras. So in each of these rasas, the relationship actually becomes closer and closer. It becomes more and more intimate. And Krishna gets more and more happiness in these relationships. So, just as we see in this world, these relationships go upward. In Krishna, so similarly, in this world also, to give up attachments is very difficult. Now, if you see, when we become devotees, first thing that happens is our friends may not become devotees. Some of our friends. And then if you know, oh, what will my friends say if they see me chanting Hare Krishna, if they see me wearing dhoti kurta, if they see me with tilak, what will they think of me? So basically, we are trying to imitate Krishna by having our sakhas. And if you want to serve Krishna, become devotee of Krishna, tak, we have to cut that sakhiras. It's difficult. But, of course, we never lose because we get other friends. We get other friends in devotional service. But then, that enjoyment, I am the hero among my friends. And when we become a devotee and we stop being a hero, then it is very painful to the ego. Because, you know, how can you be a hero wearing dhoti kurta and having short hair and tilak. So, that sakhiras invitation we have to give up. And then sometimes, not always, sometimes our parents may also become displeased. activity? Why are you doing all this? So then basically we want to imitate Krishna with vatsalyas. I want to be the apple of the eye of my parents. And I want my parents to show their profuse love on me. And that is a very difficult attachment to give up. But more difficult than even that, is actually the attraction to the opposite sex. Because that is, we are imitating Krishna. Now if you see, whether it's Akhiras or Vatsalyaras, there's nothing immoral in that. In fact, that is moral. If you have a friend, you should help the friend. If you have parents, you take care of our parents. But in the Bhagavad Gita describes, this world is like an upside down tree. So that which is the highest in the spiritual world becomes the lowest here. Lowest in the sense that it becomes most entangling. So that's why the attraction is opposite sex. Where does it originate? It originates from the spiritual world. Where does it originate from the spiritual world? There is the original attraction between male and female in Radha and Krishna, or in the gopis and Krishna. And when we want to imitate Krishna, then we take that position of Krishna. And then we want to have that enjoyment. That's how this desire originates. And that, and because Krishna gets the highest pleasure in that relationship, when we want to imitate Krishna, that becomes the highest attachment. And actually, to a large extent, this Madhurya attachment, or this perverted, this reflection of Madhurya attachment, is stronger than Vatsalyas. Many times, you know, some boys want to become Brahmachari, if they want to become, then they often have problem of lust, and they have problem, what will my parents say? And sometimes they say that, for the sake of my parents, you know, I have no desire to marry, but for the sake of serving my parents, you know, I cannot hurt them. So I cannot become a Brahmachari. Actually, it's not wrong. One can be a Grahastha, one can be a Brahmachari. But I'm talking about how Maya misleads us over here. If for the sake of my parents, I will not be a Brahmachari. I cannot hurt them. I'll get married. And then they get married. And if you get married to a modern girl, the first thing she tells us, get your parents out of the house. Or let us leave out the girl. So then what happens? That son is torn between Vatsalya and Madhurya. Or the reflection of Vatsalya and the reflection of Madhurya. And what happens? More than 95% of the time, what does he choose? He chooses the reflection of the Madhurya. He gets attracted to his wife. Because what has happened is, already lived with the parents for 20-25 years, the wife is new now. So some sense of adventure is there. Some sense of new pleasure is there. So actually he leaves. But the point here is that, actually this is the strongest attachment to give up. So, the principle is not that we somehow curb that desire. Artificial, no, I will not do this. That is not the way to control that desire. When we philosophically understand where the desire comes from, actually it is a reflection of our original desire. It's like, now this light is giving a yellow color. Now, if I put a red film on it, what will happen, what color will come out of it? Become red. So earlier it might have been a very soothing, nice yellow, but a covering can make it a glaring red. So like that, the soul has an original desire to love and serve Krishna. But when the soul gets covered by the body and the mind, then that gets filtered and distorted. That becomes distorted as lust, as the desire to enjoy separate from Krishna by exploiting matter. So the solution is not to curb this lust artificially, but to revive our love. When we revive our love, it's the same force. One way it is going towards lust, other way it is going towards Krishna. So when we revive this force, automatically this force will go down. That's why bhakti is not so much about giving up desires. Bhakti is more about taking up desires. What does it mean, taking up desires? Taking up desires means, we take up the desire to serve Krishna, and by that we automatically give up the desire to enjoy material world. The path of impersonalism is focused on giving up desires. But giving up anything is very painful, and giving up desires is especially painful. Now we can give up the things of this world, but it's very difficult to give up the desires of this world. So But when we understand that there are higher desires that we can have, a desire to love and serve Krishna, then this desire gets curbed and it ultimately gets eliminated. That's why this verse, what did it say? Bhaktim param bhagvati pratilabhya. When we get that bhakti, when that love for Krishna is revived, then what happens? Kamam rudrogam ashu apahinoti. That kam will go away. So of course, till that time, we also have to struggle. We have to minimize the association with the opposite sex. We have to fight and control the senses. But the most important principle is to arouse our love for Krishna. When we awaken our love for Krishna, then everything else takes care of itself. Now, to understand this further, so as devotees, we have to understand that this world is like a reflection. And Krishna Leela is like the reality. I was saying earlier, Urdhva Moolam Adha Shakham. Bhagavad Gita 15.1, that is upside down banyan tree. So upside down banyan tree, where do we see it? In a reflection in the river. So this world is like a reflection and Krishna's world is a reality. So now, you know, many people, they read some Radha Krishna Leela and they think, oh, Radha Krishna relationship is just like that. And they think, oh, very nice, there also a boy and girl is here, there also a boy and girl is there. But it's not like that. That is divine. That is a reality, our relationship is a reflection. But unfortunately for us, so for the pure devotees, like Rupa Goswami has a very amazing prayer. He says, Yuvati nam yatha, you know cha, yuvati nam yatha, mano bhiramate tatra, mano me ramatam tvau, tvai, he says, my dear Lord, just as a boy is attracted to a girl, and a girl is attracted to a boy, let my mind become attracted to you. Mano bhiramate tatra, mano me ramatam tvai, that let my mind become attracted to you. What is the characteristic of a boy girl attraction? It is so natural, it is so spontaneous, it is so powerful. So that means when a devotee sees the male female attraction of this world, he understands that this is a illusion. Now what is the reality? So the illusion, the reflection, when you see the reflected mango, it's one thing to just jump into the river and try to catch the mango. So what happens? You jump into the river and try to catch the mango and the river is shallow and boom, you hit the head. Come on, what happened? Mango? No mango. But I can see the mango. Jump in again. And again, the other part of the head gets broken. And then you go out and see the mango again. It looks so attractive. Again you jump in, and then this time you break the hand. And again jump in. And then break the leg. And then a counselor comes along, a material counselor, a psychiatrist comes along. He says, actually, you know, you should make a systematic plan. Make a plan so that you can catch that mango. And go through the whole river and search where it is and find out wherever it is and grab it. And people go, oh, is it here? Is it here? It is here. It's here. They go and spend their whole life trying to find the mango and they never get it. Why? Because the mango is not there. Actually, so earlier, whether it was in the India or the West, the illicit attraction was always there with male female. But at least there was a regulation of marriage was there for most people. But now the idea of marriage is collapsing. So see how Maya works is, first you change things. Okay, you have one house, change your car. Then people, at least for earlier, you have permanent jobs. Now change the job also. Why? Because the old job doesn't give me happiness, new job will give me happiness. So keep change. And then now they think, okay, I've changed my car, I've changed my house, I've changed my job. Now let me change my spouse also. So you know, they change their life partner also. Now they're not life partner, they're a few year partners. In fact, nowadays, many times when marriages take place in the West, the marriages take place with marriage as much as love affair as their legal affair. There are divorce contracts already made inside it. No? If you divorce after 1 year, and you will get this much property, I will get this much. If you have divorced after 2 years, this much. You know, where is love? They talk so much about love. But after changing their spouses also, they are not satisfied. So now the latest craze in America is something very peculiar. Like one of my friends in America, he recently told me this. He got a car driver's license. So, you know, normally whenever you have to get any legal registration, you have to fill a form. So, you know, what is your name, what is your age, which country, which state do you belong to, and then also gender. And then we write male or female. So, in America, things are not so simple. When the gender comes, what is your current gender, what was your past gender? Why? People are satisfied, I am not satisfied with this gender, so let me biologically change the gender. So they do biological operations and they change the gender. And the whole class of people, these people are called as gender benders. Gender benders. So why? Because I am not satisfied internally, so let me change something to make myself satisfied. So it's very, very pathetic when a devotee sees like this. We laugh, but when people are actually going through it, it's very pathetic. But it's all because they don't know where to look for happiness. Forgetting the connection with Krishna and looking everywhere else. And not getting anything in return. So, as devotees, a devotee understands, advanced pure devotee understands that this world is like a reflection. So even when he sees a boy and girl in this world, he thinks, oh, let my attraction towards Krishna be like. The reflection reminds him of the reality. Now we have become devotees, but still we are sadhakas. And somehow, we are not yet convinced that in this material world there is no happiness. So when for a non-devotee Maya comes, welcome, I was just waiting for you. Come. And for a pure devotee when Maya comes, he says, get out. But for a sadhaka, when Maya comes, wait, when nobody is there, then. Now, Haridas Thakur told the prostitute to wait. But that wait was different. That wait was to make her hear the holy name, so that she would be delivered. But our wait is not like that. Our wait is to get, till we get the opportunity. So we are not yet convinced that this world is a place of misery and that there is no happiness in this world. So as one of Devamrita Prasad said in one lecture, when scriptures tell us that self-gratification leads to misery, we secretly disbelieve it. Not that we, no, this is not true, we will not say like that. But how can it be true? There is so much happiness here. How can somebody say that there is no happiness? Not possible. The scriptures are exaggerating. There must be happiness here. So then Prabhupada says, okay, if you believe there is happiness, then there is. Madhulabai, that's just a drop of happiness. But because we are not convinced there is no happiness here, so what happens? Even when we see Radha Krishna pastimes, even when we see Gopi Krishna pastimes, what happens? That is the reality and this is a reflection. And for a pure devotee, the reflection reminds him of the reality. But for us, the reality reminds us of the reflection. For us, when we see Radha Krishna pastimes, we think, oh, I should also have my part that I can enjoy. That is all it is all. This garbha dance is just for that only. You know, people think I will have my partner and I will enjoy. But you will see this very strange paradox that those who are advanced devotees of Krishna, like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself or the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they had absolutely no attraction to the male-female relationship of this world. And Shukadeva Goswami also. But they are utterly attached to Krishna. At least their attraction is the understanding that this is a reflection, that is the reality. And I have to cure the reflection and turn towards the reality. So till we come to that stage, we philosophically understand. We try to philosophically analyze, understand how this world is a reflection. And then we focus on hearing Krishna Lila, but not the Krishna Lila which will remind us of the reflection and attract us to the reflection. So if hearing the Radha Krishna pastimes again attract us back to the mundane lust, then we should not hear those pastimes. Prabhupada was very practical about this. This verse says that by hearing the Radha Krishna pastime we will become purified of lust. But when will that happen? It will happen if there is anushrunayat shraddhanvito. With faith and we hear from proper authority. Then it will purify us. Otherwise it will putrefy us. Putrefy us means we will become contaminated. So, Once is on the Radhanath Maharaj was giving a lecture in America, and one tall man with a beard, a French beard, and smoking a cigarette was sitting behind. At the end of the talk, he raised his hand. He said, "Swami, I have done my PhD in Geet Govind. Geet Govind is a very esoteric book. Written by Jayadeva Goswami, talks about the conjugal passions of others. I have done my PhD in Geet Govind. And I know what Krishna does with the gopis in the forest of Vrindavan. Why do you worship such a lusty god? Can't you find somebody better to worship?" So, Maharaj told him, "With all due respect to you, sir, I have to inform you that you have done your PhD without passing your KG." What? So he said, actually the Ras Lila is the highest spiritual realization. It comes in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, after one has studied Bhagavata, after one has studied the 9th canto of Bhagavatam, understood and realized the message, then the Ras Lila is told to us. So he says, that is the highest spiritual realization. And the journey of spiritual realization begins by understanding that I am not the body, I am the soul. And when I understand I am not the body, I am the soul, then I give up all harmful bodily pleasures. And those harmful bodily pleasures are no meat eating, no talking, no gambling, no illicit sex, and no smoking. I just person was smoking. So from the point of view of spiritual realization, unless we can give up these pleasures, we are not even past our KG. Without passing our KG, how can we possibly understand what is at the PhD level? So therefore, Srila Prabhupada told that, Prabhupada has given some past tense of Radha Krishna in the Krishna book. So if we read them and if we feel agitated, then we should not read them. But when the more we become practice Krishna consciousness, the more we come to the mode of goodness. Sattvat sanjayate jnanam. In the Bhagavad Gita 14th chapter, Lord Krishna says, when you come to the mode of goodness, that mode of goodness will lead knowledge. So, when we get the philosophical knowledge, then we will understand more and more clearly that this world is a reflection. And that is the reality. When we understand that, then we will no longer be agitated by material desires when we read Radha Krishna pastimes. And then we will become purified. So, Krishna is ultimately concerned with the devotion of a person's heart. And he reciprocates, for Krishna, all devotees are just devotees. See what happens? For Krishna, the gopis are devotees, Narad Muni is a devotee, the sages performing meditation are also devotees. But for us, you know, these are devotees and these are girls. That's the difference. So the problem is with our vision. And that has to be cured. So what happens when an advanced devotee hears Krishna's pastimes with the gopis? He sees the gopis not as women, he sees the gopis as devotees. And he sees Krishna not as a young boy, Krishna as God. Nowadays, if you notice on television, a lot of religious programs are becoming popular. You know, Jai Veer Hanuman, Om Namah Shivaya, Shiva Mahapuran, and Ravan. But the Ravan is also there. But then what happens is people like to see the stories. Like we see, now of course that Krishna was very sweet. When we see this, people also like, ordinary outside people also like to see this. But generally when we see a movie, what is our attitude in seeing the movie? We identify with the hero. And we identify with the hero. And basically, so when the hero is being beaten by the villain, we also say, what is happening? We also feel shaken. And when the hero is with the heroine, then people also start whistling. Why? Because they identify with the hero. So, this is the enjoying mentality. Of course, it is second-hand enjoyment. As it is, somebody else is enjoying and we imagine I am enjoying. Second-hand. But, even at second-hand, the enjoying mentality is there. Many times when we come and start hearing Krishna Lila, then also we have that enjoying mentality. And we identify with Krishna. Krishna shot the arrow and, you know, Indra was running away and this and that and you think I am Krishna, I am great. Now it may not always be like that, but we may identify with Krishna. A devotee does not identify with Krishna, a devotee identifies himself as a devotee of Krishna. And how wonderfully Krishna, my Lord, is protecting his devotees. How wonderfully Krishna is teaching lessons to those who are going on the wrong track. That's how a devotee thinks. Now, when we hear Krishna Lila and Ram Lila, are we identified with Krishna or are we identified with the devotee? It's very difficult to say. But whom we are identifying with becomes very clear when we start hearing Radha Krishna Lila. Because when we hear Radha Krishna Lila and if we identify with Krishna, immediately our lust will get triggered. In other Leelas, when we hear, just the enjoying mentality comes. Oh yes, Krishna is such a great hero, Krishna beats up these people, Krishna performs such nice mischief. Right? All we had enjoyment. It's not wrong to enjoy, but a devotee enjoys by identifying with the devotee. So the great devotees, when they hear Krishna Leela, they don't identify with Krishna. They identify with the devotee. They identify with the gopis, with Radharani, with Arjuna, with Hanuman. And by that they get happiness. So, as long as we have the enjoying mentality, we will identify with Krishna. And as soon as we identify with Krishna, our lust will get triggered. And we're talking about we will identify with Krishna. What if a woman hears Krishna Lila? Is it that because somebody in the woman's body, she will become more attracted to Krishna? That is material attraction. Actually, a woman also has to understand that I am not a woman. I am a soul. And actually, basically, the conditioned soul, when he wants to enjoy the material world, by imitating Krishna, so that conditioned soul wants to enjoy the female body. So the soul who gets the male body enjoys the female body from the outside. A soul who gets the female body enjoys the female body from inside. But both are actually the principle of enjoyment independent of Krishna is common denominator in both cases. But if with proper philosophical understanding we hear Krishna Lila and keeping it in our mind that Krishna is God and that all these gopis are the devotees of Krishna, then there is no problem. Then in fact hearing these pastimes can also purify us. So even when we identify with Krishna, still there is some purification. But that purification will not be as much as if we identify with the devotees of Krishna. So when Krishna appeared in this world, he lived first in Gokul, then he went to Vrindavan. And then he went to where? Nandagram. In Vrindavan lived in three places. So like that, Yashoda, Radharani also, she was born in Raval. Then her parents were Kirtida and Vishwabhanu. They went to Barsana. And from Barsana she went to Yavat. She also lived in three places. So when Vishwabhanu and Kirtida were living in Barsana, at that time they decided to invite Nanda Maharaj and Vishwadamai to their house for prasad, food for a big feast. They were both fellow cowherds, and when Vishwabhanu Maharaj decided to invite, he sent the invitation to Vishwadamai. When Krishna's birthday had been celebrated a few weeks ago, at that time they had invited their family to their Krishna's house of prasad. So then they invited. They agreed. Then Yashodamai, Krishna came back from his herding the cows, and when he came back, then Yashodamai told him, tomorrow don't go for herding the cows, because let your friends go. Because tomorrow Rishabhanu Maharaj and Kirtida have invited us for food for a feast at their house. So Krishna said, what is the use of going for a feast without my friends? If my friends are not invited, then I will not go. So Yashodamai knew the etiquette. She said, okay, if you don't want to go, then you stay at home. Then Krishna started thinking, I will come. Then, actually, Kirtida, she sent several invitations and reminders, please come. And then she said that there was some distance. Even now if you go by bus, it takes about an hour or so to go to Barsana. A little more than an hour, hour and a half. So then they started off early in the morning, and just before, a few days before they started off, at that time Rishabhanu Maharaj sent a message to Radharani, and he said that we are inviting Nanda Maharaj Yashoda Mai to our house for food. So Rishabhanu Maharaj, the messenger said this, Rishabhanu Maharaj is requesting, can you cook the food for them? So Radharani said, what is the special occasion? So Radharani was there with Lalita and Shama Sakhi. What is the special occasion? No, they had invited us long ago. So in reciprocation we want to invite. Radharani said happily, yes, I'll cook. Now Radharani earlier, when Durvasa Muni had come, at that time she had cooked and served Durvasa Muni. Now you have done the Durvasa Muni drama, and you have, Durvasa Muni is a very irritable person, unpredictable person. So sometimes he will say that, I'm hungry, give me food right now. And Radharani had to run and cook everything for him. And then she will bring the food and say, I'm not hungry now. And then again he will say, right in the middle of the night, he'll say, I'm hungry. And then immediately the servant will go and wake up Radharani and say, please cook for, and he will cook. And she took care of him very nicely. And she was so very happy that actually Durvasa Muni blessed Radharani. That whatever she cooks will taste like nectar. And whoever eats what Krishna she cooks, he will never fall sick. Now of course Durvasa Muni has no power to bless Radharani. Radharani will bless Durvasa Muni. She is super, whatever devotion anyone has, that actually comes from Radharani. But in the Leela, they are playing like a normal human being. So as I told earlier, when Nanda Maharaj was asked, you know, how Krishna can kill all these big demons? So what did Nanda Maharaj say? Actually Garga Muni told me that my son is just like Narayan. So when the demons come, the power of Narayan enters into him and that's how he is able to kill. Therefore we should worship Narayan very nicely. That is their idea. And sometimes the Vrajavasis are afraid whether Narayan will protect or not. So when Krishna was there with Kaliya, some of the devatas, they thought, whoever protects that father, Shiva, Shiva, please protect our Krishna. Mahadev, Mahadev, please protect. They all pray. So they don't know that Krishna is God. So Krishna plays this Leela over there. Of course, you know how Lord Shiva comes there to get the darshan of Krishna. That's a different story. But then Radharani went into the kitchen and started cooking. And Radharani, when she cooks, no, she doesn't cook on one stove. She cooks on 50 stoves simultaneously. Running from this store to that store, this store to that store. And everything, nothing gets burnt. Everything is cooked perfectly. So she was running around cooking. And then Maharaj Shivanu made majestic arrangements. Now right from the entrance of Barsana, the main gate of which is the entrance of Barsana, to the main gate of Shivanu Maharaj's palace. The whole road was cleaned very nicely, and then coconut pots with small plants were kept there, and beautiful decorations were made on top, and the whole road was sprinkled with scented water. As soon as Rishabhanu Maharaj came at the door, at that time immediately there were servants and guests to welcome, and they started fanning and welcoming, and then they walked ahead. So Rishabhanu Maharaj was right there at the gate to welcome, and so he saw right in front was Nanda Maharaj, and next to them was Balram, and behind them was Krishna. And then Maharaj saw that, he went and embraced Krishna and Balaram. I offered his respects to Nanda Maharaj and told him, please come in. And they had come from a long journey, and the warmth of the reception mitigated all the exhaustion of the journey. And they arranged for their bathing and cleaning and dressing. They had servants helping and everything. And then they invited them to the main assembly hall where the feast was to be served. So Yashoda Mai finished her bathing very quickly, and then she went to the kitchen. And there she saw Radharani, Lalita Sakhi, Shama Sakhi, they were all cooking. And when she saw the beautiful items that were cooked, she became so happy. She says, oh Radharani, how are you? She doesn't say Radharani, she says Radha. Oh Radha, how have you cooked so many items? Such an incredible cooking this is. So Radharani became shy and she said, actually it is all your blessings. And then started counting one by one, so many items, so delicious. At that time, Kirtida came there. And then Radharani said, Yashoda said, Radha has cooked so wonderfully, but still I am unhappy about one thing. This Radha's body is like a tender lotus flower.
Why did you engage her in the difficult task of cooking? Just see. You know, because of all the cooking fires, her flower-like body has become wilted. And she is sweating so much. She is so exhausted. So Kirtida said that, actually I know that, yes, I took a great risk by engaging her in cooking. But just out of joke, Rishivana Maharaj asked her that all of you are coming, can you cook? And she immediately agreed. We didn't pressure her, she immediately agreed to cook. And you come so rarely to our house, we thought we should offer you the best delicacies. Therefore we asked Radharani to cook the best delicacies. Actually, the main cooking is going on elsewhere.
And here only so many items are going on. So then, Yashoda Bai, some main cooking, there are hundreds of people who are cooking over there.
And then Yashoda Bai said, okay, the Kirtida said, anyway, whatever Radharani, whatever wrong might have happened, you know, if you take charge of serving, then everything will become corrected. So then Yashoda Bai said, actually, Rohini is very expert in serving. Let her serve. And you get to keep that. No. Actually, all of you are guests at our house. Let all of you sit for food and Radharani, Shama Sakhi, Lata Sakhi, they will serve. And immediately Radharani became very shy. She said, no, I cannot serve. And then Yashoda Mai said, see, now you have become so expert in cooking. So now I will train you to become expert in serving. So then Radharani said, okay, he says, I will serve Yashoda Mai in the inside chamber and let Shama Sakhi serve everyone in the main chamber. So Radharani was shy to serve Krishna. She was very shy. So she said, let Shama Sakhi serve. Shama Sakhi said, yeah, this is most unreasonable. I will also serve Yashoda Mai and others can serve the main guest. So then Yashoda Mai says, don't be shy. All of you can serve everyone in the main guest room. Then finally, after bathing and getting ready, seeing the palace, then Nanda Maharaj sat, on his right side Krishna, right side Balram, and on the left side Lord Krishna. Then next to Krishna was his old mischievous friend. Who was that?
Madhu Mangal. And next to Madhu Mangal was Subal, and all the Gopas were sitting.
And then Radharani went and started serving Nanda Maharaj. And then others were Shama Sakhi was serving Krishna and Madhu Mangal and Subal. And Yashoda Mai saw this and she told Radharani that actually Shama Sakhi will not be able to serve alone, so you also help her. And in Vrindavan everybody knew that Radha Krishna are the perfect couple. So they wanted that Radharani should serve Krishna. So Radharani was feeling very shy. He started serving. And as he was serving, Madhu Mangal started speaking. Food is so wonderful. Although I am a Brahmana and I get the best feasts everywhere, you know, I have never eaten food like this. I am feeling very happy to eat this food. But at the same time, I am very worried. Because after eating this food, how will I be able to eat any other food? It is so delicious. And then
Krishna said to Madhu, so Madhu Mangal, you know, his hands and legs were moving and he was in ecstasy.
So Krishna told Madhu Mangal, don't make so much mischief and noise, just be quiet and eat the food. So Madhu Mangal turned to Krishna and he said, you mean to say I should become like a dumb man and keep quiet? After eating this food, I feel like I should praise this food with 1,000 mouths. And you are telling I can't use even my one mouth. So impossible. He said, actually, this Radha who has cooked it, she is actually Mahalakshmi. She is the goddess of fortune. Otherwise, how can anyone cook such wonderful food? And at that time, Radharani became very shy when she was hearing all this. And she went away inside. And then in between Krishna and Madhu Mangal, there's a parrot. This parrot was actually a spy of Radharani. So
Radha Rani had sent her parrot to always be with Krishna, to see what Krishna is doing and to keep coming and reporting back. So, you know, sometimes if somebody wants to speak, then what happens? They move their neck, and their neck comes out and they become tall, yeah, and then they want to speak. So, Krishna was offering some food to this parrot also. And suddenly that parrot moved the neck. And Yashodamai noticed it. So, he said, "Oh Dvija, oh best of the Dvijas, so what do you want to say?" And even immediately Madhumanga said, "See, even Yashodamai has accepted I am the best of the Dvijas." So, Dvija means what? Twice born. Dvija, Janma is there. So, a Brahmana is twice born and a bird is also twice born. Because bird is first born inside the nest, inside the egg, then he cracks the egg. So, then Yashodamai smiled and he said, "I am not referring to you, Madhumangal. I am referring to this bird." Madhumangal felt very bad. He became very silent. He looked at the bird. "Best of the Dvijas, I will show you." And then he said, the parrot also looked at Madhumanga. He said, "How can he compare Radharani to Mahalakshmi? It is a great offense." So then Madhumanga said, "What do you mean? Radharani is as good as Mahalakshmi. It is no offense to Mahalakshmi to have her compared with Radharani." So the parrot shook his head. He seemed to become very angry. "It is not an offense to Mahalakshmi, it is an offense to Radharani." Because Radharani is the source of Mahalakshmi. So then, Radharani had gone back into the inner room, in the kitchen, and she and Shyamashakhi were giggling. And she said, "Oh, these two Dvijas, they are just making so much fun. And I am feeling very shy, so I don't want to go back. You go inside." Shyamashakhi went and started serving. And Yashodamai saw, "Oh, Radharani is not there." Then she went inside again. And then she told, "Oh, Radha, I can understand that you are feeling shy. Any cultured lady will feel shy when she is praised in public. But you need not feel shy because what they are telling you about you is true." "What they are telling about you is true. So please go and serve again." And then now Radharani went and started serving in another area. Other Gopas started serving. And then Yashoda told her, "Please go and serve Krishna also." Then she started serving Krishna also very shyly. Whatever Krishna wanted, she was providing. And then all the Gopas had a very big feast. And Balram and all the Madhumangal was floating in ecstasy. Everybody else was satisfied. And Nanda Maharaj also praised. The food was unparalleled. Yesterday I was telling, how should the food be? Fragrance, first it's scat, then color, then softness, and then taste. So fragrant, colorful, juicy, delicious. That's how Radharani had cooked the best prasadam. And Nanda Maharaj is profusely glorifying the prasadam. And then after everybody had taken the food, then Yashoda went to Radha and Radharani and Kripa. He says, "You know, what that mischievous Batu was saying is true. After eating the food cooked by you, we cannot be satisfied with any other food. Therefore, I have a request to you. He says, you please come to our house every day and cook for Krishna." And he says, "I will get permission from your elders. You should come and cook for Krishna every day." So at that time, when Rishabhanu Nandini, Rishabhanu's wife, Kripta heard this, she said, "Oh Yashoda, you know, you are the queen of Vrindavan and our life is for your pleasure. So whatever you tell us, we will surely do. It is an honor for us that Radha can come and serve and cook for your family. Yes, Radha will come every day." And then Radharani heard this and her heart started bursting with ecstasy. Because now she will get to serve Krishna every day. Because although Radharani had served cooked a feast for everyone, you know, every morsel of food that she had cooked. You know, it had been surcharged with her love for Krishna. And among everybody who ate the food, the person who relished the food the most was Krishna. Because he was tasting not just the food and not just the love, because everybody had love for Krishna. But Radhani's love for Krishna is the greatest, it is the sweetest. And Krishna was tasting that love. And from that day onwards, every day, if you go on Vrindavan Parikrama, there is near Nandagram, there is a place called Pavan Sarovar. So near Pavan Sarovar is the kitchen where Radharani would come and cook for Krishna every day. And then she would cook, and after the cooking would be over, then Dhanishtha and other sakhis would take the food to the house, and then they would offer it to Krishna. And Radharani would be watching from the kitchen, watching from the window, whether Krishna likes the food or not. She would see what Krishna likes, so that she would cook that for, cook more of that for Krishna. And Krishna also knows that Radharani is watching. So he decides to have some mischief. So Radhani has cooked a very delicious laddu. And Krishna takes that and he makes his face very twisted. And when he makes the face twisted, Radhani's heart almost says, what happened? I had cooked this so carefully, what went wrong? And he pushes the plate away. And he pushes the plate next to his Madhu Mangal. He picks the laddu. Radharani becomes angry. Krishna is having fun. It's delicious, but Krishna is just making fun over there. So, in this way, Krishna and Radharani are very, very sweet pastimes. So, actually, here we will see in this particular pastime a very important thing. Radharani worked very hard to serve Krishna by cooking for him. And at that time, Yashoda Mai tells Radharani that if you come and cook for my Krishna, then I will give you the best of garments and the best of jewels and ornaments, and I will reward you profusely. So then Radharani doesn't speak anything, but Kirtida speaks. He says, no, we don't want any of these garments and garlands and ornaments. No, what we want is to please you. And if we please you, that is the perfection of our life. So actually, what did Radharani serve Krishna? And what did Radharani get by that? More service to Krishna. So, that is our philosophy. When we serve Krishna, and we serve Krishna, what happens? We get more service to Krishna. As devotees, we should never see service as a burden. Service is an honor. When we get service, service is not a burden. Service is an honor. Because, you know, for Yashoda Mai, you know, it means a big thing. For her, cooking for Krishna is the joy of her life. For her, you know, Krishna is her own child and she has fed her breast milk. And now she cooks for Krishna, and yesterday I was telling about how when Krishna wanted to go out for lunch, they gave so many food items. So like that, Krishna Mai loves to cook for Krishna. But when she sees that Radharani can cook better than me, then she says, she is not concerned that I should cook for Krishna. She is concerned that Krishna should get the best food. And therefore she asks Radharani, you cook for Krishna. So for Radharani, when Krishna Mai is asking her to cook for Krishna, that service is not a burden, it is an honor. Similarly, for devotees, when they are serving Krishna, for them, service is an honor, service is a treasure. And if they are giving that service to us, for example, if somebody tells us that, you know, you please cook for Krishna, you please look after the kitchen and cook for Krishna, or you help in the preaching, we should not think that, oh, because they couldn't find anyone else, so they gave me. Actually, it is a very intimate offering of the heart of the devotee to Krishna. So, actually when the devotees are offering us service to Krishna, that means they are considering us trustworthy. They are considering that this person is also worthy of serving Krishna. That service which I would like to do, because I have so many things to do, I am not able to do this service. So if I entrust this service to this devotee, he will do it nicely. When we do deity worship, that is the mood. Actually, we are not doing deity worship. Our spiritual master is doing the deity worship and we are simply assisting him. But even to have the opportunity to assist is a privilege. And therefore, when we get that opportunity, we should understand it's not a burden, it's an honor, it's a privilege. And by the service that we get for Krishna from the devotees, we become progressively more and more attached to Krishna. And we become disentangled from the material world. But apart from service, what is the other way we can stay aloof from Maya? If we don't do service for Krishna, then what other engagement do we have? We're simply going to Maya. Therefore, service is a great blessing. And the way Radharani worked personally hard to cook for Krishna. As a devotee, he wants to work very hard to cook for, to serve for Krishna. And the ideal example of a Vrajavasi for us is Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was living in Vrindavan, and there also he was in Radha Damodar temple where Jiva Goswami had lived earlier, and he had meditated on Radha Krishna's pastimes. So then Srila Prabhupada was also meditating on Radha Krishna's pastimes. But Srila Prabhupada left Vrindavan. For what purpose? For the purpose of fulfilling the desire of Radha Krishna. Radha Krishna have come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. They have come and they have said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, Prithvite Acheta Nagaradi Gram Sarvatra Pachar Hoive Moranam. And every town and village my name should be chanted, will be chanted. Now a devotee doesn't think, oh, Krishna has made the prediction, then Krishna will make it happen. Anything like that. He thinks that Krishna, making Krishna's prediction come as a reality is my responsibility. A devotee feels like that. Now Arjuna was shown by Krishna the Vishwarup. And in the Vishwarup, Krishna, Arjuna saw Bhishmam cha Dronam cha Jayadratham cha Sarve sahasa yodhamokhya. So yodhamokhya, all the generals, warriors on the side of the Kauravas, they are all entering into the mouth of the Vishwarupa. And when they were entering, they are all being destroyed. So then Krishna, Arjuna didn't tell Krishna, Krishna, as it is you have killed Bhishma, Drona, Kuchayadrata, then why do I have to fight? You just finish it off. No, he saw the prediction and he said, now let me work to make it happen. And if you look, read the Mahabharata, how hard Arjuna had to work, how many setbacks he had to face, how many times he got wounded, how many very careful and strategic planning he had to make to ultimately make Krishna's vision become a reality, what Krishna had shown in the Vishwarupa. So actually a devotee feels it is my responsibility. So the essence of Radharani's mood of service, Radharani's mood of bhakti is service, selfless service, doing whatever pleases Krishna. So when Krishna played the flute, the gopis left everything and ran to the forest to satisfy Krishna. Similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed that preach all over the world. That was like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's flute sound. So then Prabhupada left everything and he went to the west to preach. So Srila Prabhupada is following in the footsteps of the gopis. And Prabhupada is telling us what is the mood of selfless service. And by this mood of selfless service, where we work, take up difficulties to please Krishna, to please Krishna's devotees, then gradually we become purified. And when we become purified, then our attraction to Krishna becomes more and more and more. And as our attraction becomes to Krishna becomes more and more, then we relish these pastimes more and more. Ultimately, we enter into these pastimes. We enter into these pastimes. And that is the ultimate goal of our life. But we can enter into this pastime not just by prematurely thinking that I was an advanced devotee. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur would say that nobody can gate crash into the kingdom of God. You know what is gate crash? Gate crash means some gate is locked and you just break the door and go inside. I have come here now. Krishna, I have come to Goloka now. What is my Swarupa? Tell me now. We can't gate crash into the spiritual world. What do we have to do? We have to serve Krishna. And when Krishna sees that we are serving nicely, then he lifts us up and he takes us to the spiritual world. The Srila Prabhupada said that how do we develop love for Radha and Krishna? He said, actually we develop love for Radha and Krishna by preaching their glories all over the world. So actually, if we have to preach, preaching requires a lot of sacrifice. It requires a lot of commitment. Preaching is not just giving one class. That also requires some preparation, but that is okay, that is not so difficult. But actually preaching means we have to live according to what we are preaching. Preaching also means that we have to take care of those to whom we preach and guide them and inspire them in their spiritual life. And when we do that, then Krishna is so pleased. Prabhupada, for him, he just wanted to write books or just, you know, he could do that, he would have done that in India also. In 1962, 63, 64, he published 3 volumes of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And by that time he got a recommendation even from the then Prime Minister of India, Lal Bahadur Shastri. And after that, with that recommendation, and with already 3 books published, he could have been very easily able to publish all the other Bhagavatams also. But Prabhupada was not just interested in writing books. Yes, writing books was important for Prabhupada, but his most important mission was to transform people's hearts and make them into devotees. And writing books were a means to that, were a very important means to that. But Prabhupada saw that Indians are too enamored by the West. Indians are too captivated by everything Western, and that's why they are not paying any attention to their own cultures. Prabhupada took a huge risk of going to America. Prabhupada went from Vrindavan, to the capital of devotion, to New York. There also the Bhogari, which was the capital of degradation. The capital of devotion to the capital of degradation. For what? To fulfill Lord Chaitanya's mission, fulfill the desire of Radha Krishna, to elevate the people over there. And how amazingly elevated them and transformed them and brought them back. And when he brought them back, so many Indians were amazed. How these foreigners are practicing devotional service. And it created a flood of bhakti. And now, actually, by Prabhupada's mercy, there are so many wonderful temples coming up all over, not just India, India of course, Russia, and also in different parts of the world. So Prabhupada is actually showing us by his example how to be a devotee of Radha Krishna. There may be many devotees who are in Vrindavan, who know many, many very strange and beautiful stories of Radha Krishna. They may be absorbed in very higher mellows, at least they think they are. But the highest mellow is the mellow of selfless service. So if we serve Krishna by, what does it mean selfless service for us? That means we serve Krishna by trying to satisfy his desires under the guidance of devotees. If we take up the responsibility for preaching, for helping other souls come to Krishna's lotus feet, then Krishna becomes very pleased by that. The devotees become very pleased by that. And by their mercy, we make a rapid advancement. So, remember I started the class by telling about how parabhakti, the hearing of the Rasila can give us parabhakti, hearing of the Bastians of Radha Krishna can give us parabhakti. We can get that parabhakti also by preaching Krishna consciousness. So as sadhakas, we do both. We hear Krishna's pastime and we preach also. And by that we get double mercy. And thus we can make rapid spiritual advancement. So I summarize. I started by talking about this verse and how it has three strange characteristics. Striking characteristics. First is that, although it is describing apparently man-woman pastime, it is saying by hearing this lust will go away. Second is, it is saying that rare gift which the jnanis get after the complete successfully of their jnana, parabhakti, that we will get by hearing this. And thirdly, although this pastime is performed with Krishna, the word Vishnu is used. Why Vishnu? To help us understand, it is not some ordinary boy girl relationship, it is God Himself who is present over here. And how will this hearing this pastime free us from lust? That connection we will discuss elaborately. How the carnal desire is the biggest distraction, the biggest impediment on the spiritual path. And where it originates from is a big mystery for even religious followers and religious scholars. We discussed how the Judeo-Christian tradition has no answer. They said this tendency towards evil and sin is like a genetic defect that has come down. And they get messed up with their explanations. But the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta explains to us that actually Krishna has 5 rasas in the spiritual world. When we come to the material world, we want to imitate him by developing relationship with those 5 rasas. And just as Madhuri is the highest for Krishna, similarly, the attachment to the opposite sex becomes the strongest for us. And we try to give it up. Either as a brahmachari or as a grihastha or whatever, we have to regulate, purify and give it up eventually. And then we discuss how do you do that? It's not just by curbing the desire, but by awakening our love for Krishna. And what does awakening our love for Krishna mean? That means actually developing a spirit of service. We discuss how Radharani is selflessly sacrificing to serve for Krishna by cooking for him. And lastly, we discuss how for us, selfless service, Prabhupada is taught by his example, means preaching. And by preaching, we can actually develop our love for Radha Krishna, relish their pastimes, enter into their pastimes, and turn back to them. thank you very much. Is there any question? Yes. There is nothing I can do, not that I don't want to serve him, there is nothing I can do for him. He is so great, he is so purna, he is so self-satisfied, he has everything. He is Atma Ram, he is Aishwarya Purna. First of all, he doesn't need anything because he is self-satisfied. And secondly, he has all six opulences. So whatever one may be able to provide, he already has it. So what can I do for him?
Yeah.
Their meditation is their service. Whenever they become like trees in the spiritual world. The sthavar means the non-moving things in the spiritual world. There are no things in the spiritual world. Everyone is a being, not a thing. But those who appear like things, they are in the shantaras. So they are absorbed in Krishna. Krishna Lila.
Because
of that envy nature of our envious nature of seeing Radha and Krishna in that way, or we also possess that kind of relationship in the spiritual world?
Yeah, good question. So do we also possess that kind of relationship in the spiritual world? Means like why the attraction is there? Because is there something like that originally in the spiritual world? For us also, as I was telling, you know, the male and female forms in this material world are temporary and perishable. But in the spiritual world also there are male and female forms. But everything in the spiritual world is for the service and pleasure of Krishna. So even the male and female forms are for the purpose of serving and pleasing Krishna. So apart from Krishna, there are other people also who have male forms. But there is no attraction between male and female mutually. Males and females are all attracted to Krishna. So our attraction to the opposite sex in this world is not because we are attracted to the opposite sex in the spiritual world. It is because we wanted to usurp the position of Krishna and get pleasure in relationships the way Krishna is getting. Okay. Other questions? Yes, Dwarka in the material world and Dwarka in the spiritual world are different. Just as Vrindavan in the material world and Vrindavan in the spiritual world are different. What is the difference in Vrindavan? There is no pastime of Krishna growing. Krishna taking birth and Krishna growing. That pastime is not there in the spiritual world. Similarly, in Dwarka also, there is no pastime of, say, Krishna's sons and daughters getting married to some woman and then begetting children. Like that. Whoever is there is in that role forever. And Krishna has his queens, no doubt about that. But the way Krishna's family expands, see, even in Dwarka, Krishna is not an elderly person. Of course, Krishna never grows old. But in Dwarka also, Krishna is a youth. He is not like a 100 or 110 year old person. He is like a youth only. But he is like a married youth. So, whatever is there in the spiritual world. I don't know in Dwarka whether Krishna has sons. I have my doubts because nobody has a relationship with Krishna like father and son. But even if they are there, I'll find this out more detail. But even if they are there, if they are married and they have children, then that's how it is.
But Krishna is getting married.
No, see, Krishna book describes pastimes in the material world. See, if Krishna is getting married, that means there was a time when he was not married, and after a time there was a marriage. But it's not like that in the spiritual world.
Krishna is eternally married to the queen in the spiritual world. The Krishna book, or practically even Anandam Champu, Gopal Champu, they describe Krishna's pastimes as a progression. But there are other books like Krishna Bhavanavat Mahakavya, Govind Lilamrit, to some extent Sangeet Madhav, Raghuvartma Chandrika. These books describe the daily pastimes of Krishna. That means, okay, what Krishna does in the morning, what he does in the afternoon, what he does in the evening, like that. So there, the pastimes are not progressive in the sense that Krishna performs these or similar pastimes every day for all of eternity. Krishna has Sakhira's pastimes in the morning and the evening, or in the daytime. He has Vatsala's pastimes in the morning and the evening, like that. Those pastimes go on eternally. The particular form of the pastimes will be different. The way he talks to the Gopas, the way what mischief he does, where he goes, that may vary. But in the spiritual world, whatever relationships Krishna has, they are the way they are eternally. So, officially, say, apart from Krishna and the queens, there will be other members who are also married and they have queens. But they are all attracted to Krishna. If they have children, they have children eternally. That means that they already have children and their children are children eternally. That's how it goes on.
Maybe with Krishna they have some Vatsala, but what about each
other? That is, they are all like fellow devotees.
Like they don't have conjugal relationship?
No, no. No conjugal relationship. They are fellow devotees. Yeah. Swami, about this class we'll complete the questions. You have a question about this class?
No.
Okay, come back to you. Actually, when somebody asks us, do you have free time, it's not necessarily a attitude of doubt or attitude of just engaging us like that. The idea is that devotees are helping us to be Krishna conscious. And how they help us is by sharing service with us. So nobody expects us to do two things at one time. If we already have one service, they will not expect us to do another. Or they will tell us, okay, it's more important to do this. And that can be done later, or that can be done by somebody else. But in case, see, all of us can say, I have default services. On default service, I have to read my book, I have to chant, and I have to do my sadhana and this and that. But the fact is that our sadhana, we cannot do it too much. And if we try to read books for too long, the only thing that happens is we become bored or we become sleepy. We can't read for too long. We don't have that much taste now. So that is a fact. And we have to have some other service. If devotee asks us, are you free? And you tell him, oh, actually, I have to do my sadhana, whatever. After completing that, I can do this service. If it's urgent, I can do it right now. So we can tell what our current engagements are. And if the devotee wants us to do some other thing, we can do it. It's not that just because... Now, for example, when Raghunath Maharaj wanted me to edit his book, so I had gone to Mumbai for his Vyas Puja, and after Vyas Puja, I had done some editing and sending my mail. So after that, he asked me. He met me in the morning japa and asked me, can you stay here for a few days? I said, of course, Maharaj. Are you going to be here for a few days? So I said, Maharaj, I was planning to go back, but if you want me to stay, I can surely stay, Maharaj. Maharaj said, please stay here. And immediately I called Radhishyam and said, yes, Maharaj wants you to stay, surely you can stay there. So now even Maharaj is not directly giving me the service, he is asking, can you stay here for a few days? Does that mean that Maharaj doesn't trust me or something? No, I don't have to worry about that. When Maharaj knows that, different devotees have different services and they need to be adjusted. Then that time I was supposed to come here to some Spurti camp or something was there. Then I told Maharaj, Maharaj, I was supposed to go, but I can stay if you want. Maharaj said, please stay. And God pointed me, I didn't go to Calcutta, I stayed on. It's not wrong for us. Even with our spiritual master, we can clarify it required. But to speak of with other devotees with whom we are serving. Okay. Yes. I have two questions, and then we can take the last question of yours. Yeah.
So the Indians were following Western, and Western people who
could follow Prabhupada, but how Indians could not follow Prabhupada directly?
Yeah. Ghar ki murgi, dal barabar. It's like that. Because Prabhupada, they saw from a material point of view, he's a fellow Indian, and he's a businessman, he's an old man, what can he teach us? But when they saw that, oh, these foreigners are following Prabhupada, that means he must be something special. So it's like that. When they saw these foreigners are following Prabhupada, then they took Prabhupada very seriously.
Another question.
Yeah.
Pure devotees see gopis as devotees. And we also understand gopis as devotees. So how we are not pure devotees?
We may intellectually understand that gopis are pure devotees, but it's a matter of realization. The more we become purified, the less we start seeing the gopis as just females. We start seeing them as devotees. So it's more not just a matter of seeing. It's a matter of what kind of thoughts and desires are awakened in our heart. You know, it's not just gopis. If we are really seeing the gopis as devotees, then we should actually see women also as devotees. Actually, women are perceived at different level by different people. You know, a non-devotee materialist, he sees women as object for enjoyment. A sadhaka should see a woman at different levels. First we see women as maya, as a distraction. In the scriptures we describe, you know, that woman is like a trap. Be very careful, stay avoid. In culture or society, we treat women as matajis, as mothers. Beyond that, if they become devotees, we treat them as Vaishnavis. In between these two, treating Matajis and Vaishnavis, when we become preachers, we should be able to see women as souls who are also lost, forgetful of Krishna, and then we have a duty to connect them with Krishna. So there are different levels of perception. No, is all the object of enjoyment, as a trap of Maya, as mothers, as souls in search of Krishna, as Vaishnavis, as devotees of Krishna. So now, of course, when we see, we should see women like this, rather than we should see and think of all these things. We should not see those women at all, but while reciprocating, this is how we should think about them in the mind. But we cannot artificially do that. You know, if our consciousness, the level where we are seeing them as objects of enjoyment, we can't see them as souls, lost souls in service of Krishna, and lost souls in need of Krishna consciousness. You know, we are ourselves lost souls at that time. You know? Lost souls being dragged by Maya. So, actually, gradually, when we truly are able to see even women as devotees, as meant for Krishna's pleasure, then we are actually truly seeing the gopis also as devotees. So, even all women, the women are potential devotees. They are souls who are actually in need of Krishna consciousness. Now, they may not be dressed like devotees, and then we have to reciprocate accordingly. If they are going to distract us from Krishna consciousness, we have to keep a distance. But we have to understand that they are also souls. We have to have a spiritual vision towards them. And the devotee Matajis, we should not think that they are, you know, they are also for my enjoyment. That means, you know, okay, as a devotee Mataji, I will also be a devotee, and we will get married and we will enjoy together. We will enjoy Krishna consciousness together. You know, no, that will also not work. So only when we have a pure vision, in the Ishopanishad, in mantras 4 to 8, it is described how one can get a pure vision of God. So in verses 4 and 5, it is described how one initially sees God as very contradictory. Tadejati tannaijati tadure tadvantike tadantarasya sarvasya tadu sarvasya asya bhayata. That God is far away, He is close. He walks, he does not walk. He's inside everything, he's outside everything. It's completely bewildering. What does this mean? But then the next two verses are described how such a soul trains himself to see all living things with spiritual vision. Yasmin sarvani bhutani atme bhavudvijanataha tatrako mohaka shoka ekatvamanu pashyataha. Yasmin sarvani bhutani, all living means atme bhavudvijanataha. One who understands that they are actually souls and sees them like that. then after being able to see souls, you know, the spiritual vision, then one gets a clearer understanding of God. Saparyaga chukramaka imabranam ashnaviram shuddham apapavidnam kavir manishi paribhu swayambhu yatha thito arthan vidada shashvati vyasamabhya. Saparyaga chukram. Then the, in verse mantra 8 it is described, such a person will understand Krishna as supreme, as pure, as prophylactic, as all moral, as all beautiful. So we have to see whether we are having a pure vision towards the people of this world. Then actually our pure vision of the gopis is realistic. Otherwise it is more intellectualized than actualized. Okay. Yes, true.
It's not from today,
no. Okay, we'll come back to it.
Sometimes some festival are there. So we have to do some services, and because of those services, our score in Sadhana card goes decreased. So our facilitator tells us to maintain the Sadhana card also, and we are got some food that you are telling to render the service also, and you are telling to maintain the Sadhana card also.
See, when two authorities tell you to do two different things, you shouldn't get torn. Let the two of them only decide. You don't have to get torn about these things. You can just tell them, Prabhuji, you are telling me to do this thing, to do my sadhana, but I was told by that devotee to do these things. So if you want to be sadhana, can you please tell that devotee accordingly? So then that will get clarified. It will, you know, it's not that we have to get torn between two authorities. You just clarify. Maybe if at that time some service is required, you can do that. When the 13th day of the battle, Arjuna went into the Kaurava camp to kill Jayadrath. So Arjuna told Satyaki that you be by the side of Yudhishthir and protect Yudhishthir, because Dronacharya had taken a vow that I will arrest Yudhishthir and bring him alive to Duryodhana. Said you be there by the side and protect Yudhishthir. Then Yudhishthir started feeling worried that Arjuna has gone all alone inside. So he told Satyaki, Arjuna is your teacher. Now you should liquidate your debt to your teacher by going inside the enemy camp to assist him. He will need you right now. Satyaki felt torn, because Arjuna had told him, be by Yudhishthira's side. And Yudhishthira was telling him, go there. Now at that time he started thinking, you know, if I go and Yudhishthira, something happens to Yudhishthira, then Arjuna will never forgive me. On the other hand, if I don't go and something happens to Arjuna, then not only will the world consider me to be a coward for not going into hell, but also I will have failed to serve my teacher. So his heart was torn. At that time, you know, he could not go inside to ask Arjuna. So he asked Yudhishthira only at that time. He said, yeah, this is what Arjuna had told me, to be by your side explicitly, because Dronacharya may attack. So please tell me what I should do. So then Yudhishthira said, don't worry. That as far as Dronacharya is concerned, he will be fully caught up in trying to protect Jayadrath, and he will not even have the time to attack me today. And even if he comes, Bhima is here. And Bhima was actually feeling very bored, because there was all the action was happening inside and he was just standing here not doing much. So Bhima said, you go, I'll take care. So then Satyaki went inside. So Satyaki did clarify. Now if two authorities give some instruction, and if you can get the two authorities to meet at that time, that's best. If not, at that time you can clarify with that particular authority. Still they said, go and do this. And you can do it. And when he reached Arjuna, at that time Arjuna was first annoyed. He saw Satyaki and told him, I told you to be with Yudhishthira. He said, no. Actually, Bhima is there to take care. And they told what had happened. He said, oh, very good, he came now. Now please assist me. We have a huge effort to do. And then of course, Yudhishthira felt, oh, Satyaki is just a 16-year-old young boy. And yesterday a 16-year-old boy went inside Bhima and he was killed. So now I sent Satyaki inside. So he started worrying about Satyaki. So then he told Bhima. Before Yudhishthira could speak anything, Bhima nodded his head, yes, I will go. Because that Bhima just plunged into the enemy army. And the Kauravas were shaking because of Arjuna's attack. When Satyaki came along, they became even more worried. But when Bhima came, they just turned and started running away only. So on that day, one day, Bhima killed 30 of the Kaurava brothers. And when Dhritarashtra heard this, he fainted. Duryodhana was also heartbroken eventually. The point is that You can always clarify. Okay? Yes, sir.
Like, you know that after the journey of Vrindavan, the minister came. And Vishnu is one of the besides one of the born, served to demigod. So after drinking that demigod, did they become immortal or what?
Oh, see, when you say the nectar, that nectar is actually illusion. It's not exactly something which makes you immortal. It prolongs one's life. There is no immortality possible in the material world as long as we have material bodies. But that nectar prolongs one's life. So when they say that there is no death in the heavenly planet, what does that mean? When your time to die comes, you are thrown out of the heavenly planet, then you die. So that way there is no death in the heavens. Even Indra, when his time to die comes, what happens? He's taken off the throne, he's thrown out of heaven. And after he goes out of heaven, then he dies. This is miserable. The death is always there. Sometimes heavens are said to be places for the Amaras. But Amar doesn't mean immortal. Because their lifespan is so long as compared to ours, it's almost like immortal. But it's not immortal. Immortality is possible only in the spiritual world. So as long as we have material bodies, we are prone to death. And the Amrut, if you see the Amrut Manthan when it happens, that time also, how does the whole thing start? Actually, this is all started in the 8th canto. The Asuras, headed by Bali, have become very strong because they have served Shukracharya nicely. And by his Brahma Tejas, he gives Shakti to Bali. And Bali defeats Indra and has to flee. And then Indra, he approaches Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu tells him, now they are too strong for you. You cannot defeat them now. Therefore, now you make a pact and both of you get the nectar out and both of you share the nectar. And that will make you stronger. So he doesn't say in the Bhagavatam also that the nectar will make you immortal. So the nectar basically prolongs the life. It's not that it makes you immortal. Oh, but then that also doesn't, Rahu lives longer than other demons. But when the planets are, when the whole universe is destroyed, it's not that Rahu is existing at that time. Rahu is also destroyed at that time. Relatively longer lifespan. Okay. Yes, sir.
Any the first one is difference between deities and idol, and the second one, idol, difference between
deities. Yeah. So yesterday, Mr. Chandan was asking this question, that I'll paraphrase your question quickly. That if Krishna is actually the deity, then what exactly is the difference between deity and idol? Then how can some invaders come and desecrate the deities? If Krishna is God, then how can the deities be desecrated? Yeah. Anything else? Yeah.
Like in idol theology, we have the conception that in every atom Vishnu is present. So I wanted to ask you, so what happens in case of deity? Are so many Vishnus in there? Are so many Vishnu not there? Have they merged into single Krishna? Does the deity hand, body parts become Sachitanand? And if an atheist try to break it, why it breaks? And do pure souls like Maharaj say actually that Sachitanand?
Good question. So Krishna is present everywhere, even in an atom. Every atom is present. So when we talk about Krishna manifesting through the deity, that is not the Shiva, Daksha, Vishnu or the Paramatma manifesting through the deity. It can be. But when we make the deity is made according to a particular description given in the scriptures. So the deity is made of Krishna, then actually it is Krishna manifesting through the deity. So whether it is a, so now if we make a statue of Gandhi, in every atom in the statue of Gandhi also Vishnu is present. And every atom of deity of Krishna also Vishnu is present. But we are not talking about that presence of Vishnu in every atom at all. Andantarastha Parmanu Chayantaram. That is not relevant here. But when we make a deity according to the description given in the scriptures, and then after that we do Prana Pratishtha, then Krishna, who is personally present in the spiritual world, who is in his expansion, present as the super soul in everyone's heart, as the atom, as the Paramatma within the atoms also, that Krishna manifests as the deity. So So we can say that the Paramatma from one of the atoms is manifested as deity. But no, the Paramatma within the atoms is still there as it is. But Krishna personally manifests the deity when the form is made according to scriptural description and when the Pranatishtha is done. So then, is the deity spiritual or material? The deity is spiritual though it is made up of material components. Now, when we use the word spiritual, it is used in two senses with two meanings, and we have to be careful which meaning we are using it. There are things which are spiritual in constitution and there are things which are spiritual in application. That means this mic, it's spiritual. Why? Because it is being used to glorify Krishna. So in that sense it is spiritual in application. But in constitution, in composition, it is still made up of earth, water, fire, aether. So it is material. So the deity, when the deity is made of material elements, the elements are described in the 11th canto, and the science of deity worship is elaborately explained in the Pancharatra Shastras. And there is so how to worship the deity is described in the Pancharatra Shastras. The how to make the deities is described in the Shilpa Shastras. There are specific scriptures for all these things also. So the deities are made of material elements. In that sense we can say that the deity is material. But when the Prana Pratishtha is performed, the material elements become spiritualized. They become spiritualized. And therefore pure devotees can see Krishna personally present as the deity. Therefore, in Chaitanya Charitamrita there is verse that Pratibhurti nahi tumi sakshat Vrajendra Nandan. You are not just a Pratimurti, not just an image, you are sakshat Vrajendra Nandan. So when the deity is made according to scriptural instruction and the Prana Pratishtha is performed, Krishna personally manifests as the deity. In that case, Krishna is non-different from the deity. Now when Krishna manifests as the deity, he manifests for a particular purpose. The purpose is to give the devotees an opportunity to serve him. So Krishna is not manifesting as the deity to prove his omnipotence. Omnipotence means being all-powerful. Krishna in general does not manifest his omnipotence in this world. Why? Because the souls have come here to imitate Krishna, and therefore if Krishna manifests omnipotence, the soul will never be able to imitate him, never be able to think that he is God. So that's why he does not manifest his omnipotence in this world. He manifests his omnipotence in only one form, as time. Time conquers the conqueror of all conquerors. Time overpowers everyone. So in that form he manifests his omnipotence. Apart from that, Krishna does not manifest his omnipotence. And the deity form of Krishna is not meant to manifest the omnipotence of God. It is meant to give an opportunity for the devotees to serve the Lord and in this way increase their attraction to the Lord. So every manifestation has a particular purpose. And when every manifestation of God in matter, in this material world, has a particular purpose. And when we approach that manifestation for that purpose, we see it as spiritual. But if we approach it for any other purpose, we will see it as material. So when we serve the deity faithfully, lovingly, carefully, then we will see how that deity is not just stone, not just marble, not just wood, but it is actually God and can reciprocate with us. Now how are some iconoclasts, some people of other religions, they would break deities and say, hey, where is your God? There is no God here. But it's a very foolish idea. Because even they have their sacred scriptures. And some of them even worship the sacred scriptures. Even if they don't worship the sacred scriptures, they consider them divine. In the sense that they are originated from God, and in the sense that they are somehow holy. But although the sacred scriptures are holy, can the Quran or the Bible or the Guru Granth Sahib not be torn? Can it not be burned? It can be. Now, just recently, one Christian priest. He burned the Quran in public. And because he says this Quran caused the 9/11. So now it is anniversary, so he said that this, he burned the Quran. So now, is it possible to burn the Quran? Yes. And just because somebody burns the Quran, does it mean that it is no longer divine? No. The divinity of any manifestation of God in this world is not proven by its ability to break material laws. The divinity of the Bible is not proven by the Bible being put in fire and not being burned. The divinity of the Bible will be seen when we study the Bible with a devotional attitude and see how it enriches us with the divine wisdom and how it transforms our heart. Similarly, the divinity of the deity is not proven by somebody coming to desecrate the deity and the deity not getting desecrated. The divinity is proven by those who approach the deity faithfully, serve the deity and find their heart getting transformed and purified. Krishna's manifestations in this world are for the devotees to render service. They are not for the demons to prove his existence or prove his omnipotence. Krishna doesn't care in that sense for the demons. He loves the demons also. But because the demons want to do demoniac things, Krishna doesn't want to interfere with them. So Krishna doesn't have to prove his omnipotence to them. Now when Lord Narasimhadev manifested through the pillar, it was not because Hiranyakashipu challenged, where is Vishnu? It was because Prahlad Maharaj said that, yes, Vishnu is there in this pillar also. Before that, actually after Hiranyakashipu was killed, Hiranyakashipu went out searching all over the village, where is Vishnu? I want to find him, I want to kill him, I want to revenge the death of my brother. But he couldn't find Vishnu anywhere. But then Vishnu appeared in the pillar of his own palace. Why? Because Prahlad Maharaj said, Satyam vidhatam nijabhritya bhashitam. So that's why, as devotees, we have to clearly understand this, that the divinity of the deity is seen through service, not through miracles. Miracles where they will not get desecrated. Now, there was one famous Hindu who later on became a Buddhist. He said that, or he basically became an iconoclast again. So he said, once I went to the temple to pray, and I saw a fly on the head of the deity. And I got a realization. Not a realization, he got a visualization. What was it? He said, oh, I realize, if this deity cannot remove the fly from his head, own head, what can he remove problems from my head? And therefore, there is no need to pray to the deity. There is no God in the deity. But actually, this is a completely misleading understanding. Now, can Krishna not remove the fly from the deity? Surely he can remove. But he has not come there for that purpose. He has come there for us to give the appointed service. So, if we see a fly on the deity, then immediately our devotee feels, oh, I am not serving this properly. Immediately we will go and we will remove the fly, we will clean the altar so the flies won't come. So, the attitude has to be devotional, not defiant. Generally, for all offering and worship purposes, we should be worshipping deities or laminations or pictures of the deities, not paintings. Paintings are, Prabhupada said, windows to the spiritual world. They said that they give us glimpses of how life is in the spiritual world and to attract us and remind us. But it's not the painting should be neglected or kept unclean or disrespected. But generally, paintings, if there is no alternative, then we can even a painting of Krishna, we can offer food. But with the alternative, the food should always be offered to deities. Because paintings are more artistic renditions to give us glimpses of the spiritual world. Paintings are not meant for worship. Like in our temple also, you will see that There are paintings on the roof, there are paintings on the side of the walls, side walls. But you know, it's not that the pujari comes and does aarti for all the paintings. No, that's not required. In Juhu temple, if you go, they have got these dioramas. How many of you have been to Juhu temple anytime? Oh, all of you, Nishtha came here. So, you know, on the side, that is, I just been to Juhu before I came here. So, there is Radharas Bihari, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, and on this side there is Nagauritai. And on this side you will see Buddha is there, and then so many other dioramas are there. So now, while Narasimharti is going on, we may turn and look at Narasimhadev. But the pujari doesn't come out of the altar and start worshipping Narasimhadev over there. Those are dioramas. So whether there are paintings or there are dioramas. For the dioramas, we don't do any pranapratishtha. The dioramas are also made according to scriptural description. So they are worthy of our respect, and they are primarily meant to help us remember Krishna. And they are meant to offer visual glimpses of the spiritual world for both devotees and non-devotees. But they are not generally objects of worship. So food should be offered to the deities or to pictures of deities. Now, with respect to difference between deities and laminations or pictures, the principle is yatha mam prapadyante, that once Krishna has been invoked as the deity, then the photos of the deity, they are called as chitrarupa. Like we have archa rupa, so like chitrarupa. So they are also considered sacred. And if we approach the deities with devotion, approach the lamination also with devotion, then see, Krishna's manifestation as the deity does not depend only on the pranapratishtha. Pranapratishtha is important. But you know, there will be three people in a temple. One is a pure devotee, one is sadhaka, and one is an atheist. So, even if the pranapratishtha is done, still the atheist will not be able to see Krishna there. Because he has no faith, he has no devotion. The pure devotee is able to see non-difference between Krishna and the deity. And the sadhaka, with faith he understands that if I worship and I serve, then one day I will see that this deity is non-different from Krishna. So pranapratishtha is important, but pranapratishtha is not everything. Ultimately, the revelation of Krishna as the deity depends on one's consciousness. So, if we have laminations, and we are respecting and worshipping the laminations, then Krishna can manifest as the laminations also. Now, what standard should we follow? That will vary according to time, place, circumstance. Generally, in the temple where there are full-time pujaris, they have higher standards. The offering has to be at fixed times. There has to be this many times offering. Now, grihasthas in their houses may not follow so strictly. Their offering times might be slightly variable. Number of times they offer might also be variable. And the grihasthas are told that it should be like that. Now, it shouldn't happen that, you know, we consider that we have deities over here. So even if some camp is going on in Mayap, you know, we have to worship the deities. So we have to keep pujari over here. To keep worshiping, we have to keep a cook over here, where he can cook for the deities. No, that's not required. These deities are considered to be expansion of the original deities. And when, say, we are not able to go to a temple to serve the deities, then we serve them over here. But if we can go to the temple, then they are more happy that we serve them in their form in the temple than here. So how much they manifest here depends on our service attitude. And because the service is of much higher standard in the temple, so they manifest more in the temple. So it's not a 1-0 thing. It's proportional, reciprocal proportional manifestation. So now we may ourselves have some laminations of Krishna. Should we worship them? Should we offer bhoga to them? Not required. But we should not disrespect them. So generally the standard that we follow is when we make pamphlets or when we make this Govinda's prasadam packets or prasadam boxes. So we don't put pictures of the deities over there, because that may be thrown by people. And people may throw the boxes away, they may go into the dustbin, and then somebody may trample their foot on that. Now that may be offense. So generally on the deities, on the parcels and packets which are likely to be thrown away, we don't put deities pictures. we either just put the name Govindas, we may put the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, and we may put pictures. For example, we may put a picture of Krishna, and sometimes we may pamphlets. On pamphlets we may put a picture of Krishna eating butter for Janmashtami festival. Like that we may put. Now, even putting the food on the Hare Krishna Mahamantra might also be an offense. But Krishna is merciful. And the Nama Rupa is certainly more merciful than the Archa Rupa. So if we don't put the name, people are not able to come to know only what the Mahamantra is. At least when they see the Mahamantra, they are getting some Sukruti by that. So the Nama Rupa being more merciful, even if people trample on it, that is not apraad. But the deity is because we have invited for service. So we should not put the deity's picture on anything that is likely to be thrown away. Now, it may happen that we install the deities now, and after 300 years, there's nobody to take care of the deities. At that time, there's nobody to serve. But that time, we are not responsible. Because during our lifetime, we did our service. Okay. Yes, last question.
Would you like to mention this, Mayavadi, he has to give up all his desires. But for us, like we have to shift our desire from to Krishna, to serve Krishna. But then, you are telling like for Mayavadi, it will become painful because you can't become desireless. But for our case also, like for a person who is having egoistic or enjoying mentality, to start serving Krishna, that is also like one kind of
Goodness. So it will taste like poison in the beginning. We can't avoid that. But the poison is thin and small. If you tolerate it and you penetrate it, then there's a lot of nectar waiting. On the other hand, in the mode of passion, it tastes like nectar in the beginning, but it's like poison in the end. Nectar is little in the beginning, but after there's a lot of poison. So we have to tolerate that. But relatively speaking, if you say the regulator principle that we had to follow was not no meat eating, but no eating. Practically impossible, isn't it? So it's not that give up desires, give up sinful desires. So that's why it's relatively much easier to practice the path of bhakti than to follow the rules and regulations of jnana. Okay. So thank you very much for your kind attention, and I was happy that I was able to come, and all of you are so enthusiastic in all the classes and very intelligent questions and very receptive audience. So I was very happy that I could serve you in a little bit way, and if I spoke anything that hurt you, that was not my intention. Please excuse me for that, and the march ahead in Krishna consciousness. Originally when I had come, I think four or 5 years ago, that time the altar was on this side. Small box it was, you know. So the altar has grown, the devotees have grown, both in number and in their advancement also. The devotees have passed from here and gone to different places, some have joined and become wonderful devotees. So the world is flourishing very nicely, and very wonderful to see that. And now, as you keep practicing and preaching, Krishna will send more and more devotees, more and more facilities, and preaching can expand very much. Just as you have a huge voice in Kharagpur, in the future you can have a wonderful voice here also. Already it's manifesting. And all of you in the future, maybe 10 years down the line, you know, you will be the pioneers who did the foundational work for all this. So it is a very glorious service. And my best wishes and prayers for all of you. So thank you very much. We don't have a spiritual name, or what is the spiritual name for this voice? Oh, I forgot. Jagannath Puri, huh? You don't have Jagannath here?
Yeah.
Where? Oh, there, huh? Okay. So Jagannath Puri boys, Bhakta Vrindaki.
Jai.
Krishna Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Gaur Bhakta Vrindaki.
Jai.
Jai Gaur Premanande. Please accept my humble obeisance. Mancha. Krishna Prabhupada. Jai. 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 Jai.